professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I have a very special guest here tonight. I'm excited to tell you a little bit more about. So let's get into it. It's a frustrating and heartbreaking reality that we all have been touched with in some way, a diagnosis. When the struggle is real, it's painfully hard to see the brighter side of things or even be present and self-aware enough to pick up valuable life lessons. That's why tonight's show is so important. Whether you're currently dealing with a diagnosis for yourself or a loved one, or you weathered this journey, no matter what the outcome, we offer hope. Hope for peace and healing of the mind, body, and spirit, and an awakening like no other. I'm thrilled and beyond blessed to have Lori Merrill Fink join us to share just that. Lori was a theater professor for 18 years at SIU when she moved into administration and retired as director of the University Honors Program in 2018. Her theatrical work included directing, choreography, acting in, or coaching nearly 100 productions. Her specialty was in the area of movement and acting, with a particular focus on the health and use of the body and freeing individuals from their habitual patterns, opening them to greater creative expression. A keen interest in the body-mind connection led Lori to study many movement forms, and which resulted in her being certified as a Laban movement analyst with Columbia's College Dance Movement Therapy Program, authentic movement facilitator at Naropa University, and journey dance at Kripalu. Her most recent study and certification is in the Healer Within Qigong with Chinese medicine doctor Roger Yanka.
I'd like to start with a reading.
Yes, please.
To journey without being changed is to be a nomad. To change without journeying is to be a chameleon. To journey and be transformed by the journey is to be a pilgrim. That is from Mark Nepo's Book of Awakening. He also happens to be a cancer survivor, and the book is a series of daily readings, lots of powerful stuff in there. So thank you for inviting me. I'm really honored and psyched, and if I'm honest, a little bit nervous, to be here to share my pilgrimage with you and your listeners. And I hope that by doing so, I can offer some encouragement.
Wonderful.
Great. So I guess I'll start at the beginning.
Yes, please.
I retired in June 2018, as you mentioned. And like most people, I had a really long list of all the things that I would finally have time for. Travel, purging the house, dusting cobwebs off my craft projects that had been sitting in the basement forever, actually making some of the recipes on my Pinterest board, you know, stuff like that. Typical things. And in August, I was visiting my daughter in North Carolina. She was playing Sophie in a production of Mamma Mia. And without going into a lot of detail, I ended up going to the ER, but one morning I woke up and one of my breasts looked very, very different, like overnight.
Wow.
And creepy different. And so I went on the internet, which can and can't be our friend sometimes, and diagnosed myself with inflammatory breast cancer and freaked myself out. I was, you know, 800 miles from home. I was supposed to be there for 10 days. So I get on the phone with, who do you call? Your sisters. So I call each of my sisters, and I'm sitting in the grocery store parking lot sobbing because I'm trying to keep this a secret from my daughter and from my in-laws and my nephew who were all visiting. I spent a lot of time and energy trying to hide that. So I went to the ER in North Carolina where a PA diagnosed me with mastitis. Now, how a 56-year-old menopausal, non-lactating female could have mastitis was a mystery to me. But I was so relieved that everything was going to be okay. They gave me some antibiotics and said, you know, check out with your regular doctor when you get back home. So 2 weeks go by. I check in with my OB. Things aren't looking any better. And so she switches my antibiotics and says, well, if things aren't better in a week, I'll refer you to the breast center for further testing. Well, it didn't get better. So I had a mammography and a punch biopsy and an ultrasound and an MRI, and it revealed that I had indeed had inflammatory breast cancer.
Wow.
Which is a rare and aggressive form. And then there was another sucker punch in that I was also diagnosed as being triple negative, which means that after the chemo, surgery, and radiation, that I could not have hormonal therapy because I was negative instead of positive, and that hormonal therapy, increases survival rates. So, I went from freaking out to elation to, are you kidding me? So I have a problem in my life about being right, wanting to be right. And this time I was, and it really sucked to be right. So the internet was not my friend at this point. In fact, I didn't go back on the internet after North Carolina because I had already seen the statistics and all that sort of stuff. Typical reactions, shock, disbelief, a lot of self-blame, and fear and panic. Yeah. And there was this dark night of the soul. And, it seems like we were in a fog, my husband and I and our son, who was still living with us at the time, for several days. And people stand around at wakes. I know I told you this when we were having coffee the other day. People stand around at wakes and nod, life is short, and everybody says, oh, yes, you're absolutely right. But, a diagnosis, and any listeners out there who have received one know that suddenly that reality is, right on the tip of your nose. It was real. I was scheduled for a PET scan to see if there was any metastasis anywhere. And I remember praying, God, please let my scans be clean. I just need one little break in all of this. One break. And my scans came back negative. So, I don't know, there was a little shift for me there. Like there was a sliver of hope. And I think, a lot of people who get a diagnosis, ask why me, that sort of thing. And I'm not sure I went there. Where I went was, if I believe, like many people do, and this is kind of out there, I think, for some people, but I just use this question. If I believe that I chose to incarnate and had a soul contract that included this diagnosis, then why did I sign up for this? Like, who in their right mind would do that? Yeah? So, then I went to, how could I see this was happening for me rather than to me? And what did my diagnosis have to teach me? And that's when things started taking on a different energy, a different shape. I mean, not to say that there still weren't some freaked out times and there have been many since, but there was just a real shift in my approach to everything. So the other thing a diagnosis did for me was suddenly I was shoved to the front of the line. Hello. It's not something I was very good at, putting myself first. I mean, it just was not in my nature. Without going into any specifics, I grew up in a very loving but dysfunctional home. And some people might say, well, who hasn't, right? I mean, it's a big club. I get it. But as a child growing up in a dysfunctional home, like all the other children, I developed some coping skills at a very young age to weather what was going on in my house. And those wore some really deep, deep grooves in my psyche or my life or whatever, in my worldview. And those are grooves that I'm working with. I still continue to grapple with them a little bit, but here are some of the grooves. Perfectionism.
Yeah.
I've pretty much recovered from that joy killer, I'm glad to say. I call myself a recovering perfectionist. Hypervigilance, highly empathic, a caregiver, a control freak, right, honey? I know you're listening. And not really wanting to express my emotions, especially the quote-unquote bad ones or the dark emotions. In fact, in my undergraduate training, so here I am, 18 to 22, they called me Mother Meryl.
Wow.
Meryl's my maiden name. So, like, in crisis, I'm your girl, right? I'll bring you chicken soup if you've got the flu. I'll stay all up with you all night, handing you tissues, telling you what an a-hole your boyfriend was that just broke up with you. I'll hold your hair out of your face if you're getting sick in the toilet at the bar. I've done that. Your car breaks down. You need a lift. I'm your gal. In graduate school, they called me the Ice Maiden. Yeah. Doesn't sound very complimentary. But it was actually a really accurate description of where I was at that point in my abilities as an actor, because I could easily play characters that were detached, aloof, you know, the battle axes, the ones that were very much in control. And I have to thank Diane Winslow, my movement teacher in graduate school, who broke me one day in front of the entire acting class. And, I mean, broke me to the point of tears. And not in a abusive sort of way. She was coaching me. And I just burst into tears, and she said, keep doing your monologue, keep doing your monologue. And I did, and it was an amazing experience. And that taught, and the ground didn't open up and swallow me. Like, I was vulnerable in front of people. I cried, and, you know, it was not the end of the world. So that was a tremendous gift. I mean, both for my acting, but also for, more importantly, for my life. Now, those little coping mechanisms I talked about and, you know, those deep grooves, none of those qualities are really bad in and of themselves. You know, like the perfectionist in me, you know, as that played out, you know, it was a pursuit of quality and an attention to detail, which served me very well in my professional life. Hypervigilance makes me very keenly aware of my surroundings and what's going on with other people. You know, there's a joke out there, you know, it's not lost unless mom can't find it. You know, I mean, I would, mom, where is my, it's here. Honey, have you seen my, it's on your dresser? That sort of thing. So that hypervigilance, you know, was serving me in a healthy way. The empath in me, that served me very well as an actress. And I think it makes me to this day a very good listener and an available, compassionate friend. The control freak, well, this whole experience has been, you know, I mean, a series of letting goes, but, you know, the control freak in me, I knew that if I were in charge, I'd know how things would turn out. So that sort of predictable outcomes, and also responsibility. I mean, I knew I could count on me to follow through on
things. I think resilience, too. I mean, yeah. Being a control freak can have its negative, right? Mm-hmm. But it can also have positive. You aren't going to give up.
Right.
You're going to push the issue. And in a situation like you were on, somebody needed to take control.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And as you're going to tell us later, you had a partner up above.
I did.
But that's exciting. Before we get too far away from this idea, I want to go back to what you said about coming to the realization or trying to find what is happening for me instead mm-hmm. of to me. And that is mm-hmm. such a, as we talk on this show, that kind of 30,000 foot glance, you know, not being able to be in the ditch, but more of that strategic approach. How far after your diagnosis did you come to that? And was that something that came to you, suggested to you, or did you just draw a line in the sand and say, I'm going to choose to see it this way?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, it came pretty early, I'd say within the first couple of weeks. And I'll talk more about my epiphanies and in just a minute. And I had heard you know, life is happening for you, not to you, before. And I think a lot of things that I may share in here, people will go, oh, sure, well, that's nothing new. I've heard that before. But I think the difference for me with a diagnosis is that rather than nodding my head, I'm putting legs on all of this.
Right.
You know, I'm doing my best to walk the talk.
Right.
Rather than just, oh, yes, absolutely, there's only the present moment, yes. Ooh, you know, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah. We are going to have to take our first musical break. Can you believe it?
Oh,
already? But I'm so excited to share some of this because typically on this show, we play, you know, an independent artist or we'll feature something. But this time I wanted Lori to come up with the music, and she has such an amazing playlist called Awake at the Wheel. And if we didn't say that ahead of time, I do want to mention that the topic tonight is Awake at the Wheel, Lessons from a Diagnosis, with Lori Merrill Fink. And we are going to be able to post this playlist on the blog afterwards, right, and on the podcast. So I'm excited for you guys to get that. She's got some amazing music. So the first song up is This Thing Is Not Going to Break You. So tell me a little bit before we go into that song, your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I started doing a lot of reading. I went on the internet in a healthy way, and music is something that's always been a part of my life. I was, you know, raised with it. I studied it. I perform it, all of that sort of thing. And so I went straight to music, too. So this song, the title just caught my eye. I'd never heard of this artist before. And then I started listening to the lyrics and sobbed the first time I listened to it. And it's become my anthem, really.
Ooh.
So
I love that.
Listen to it.
Let's listen to it. This Thing Is Not Going to Break You by Krista Wells. Thank you, and welcome back to Encouragementology. Tonight, we have a special guest, Lori Merrill Fink, and we are talking about Awake at the Wheel, Lessons from a Diagnosis. And before we went to the musical break, I hope you were listening, because Lori was telling us really how she got here and the beginning of her journey. And what are some of the lessons, life lessons, that she's learned along the way? Such a great perspective. And to be able to say right after a diagnosis, this is how I'm going to choose to move forward. And so many people, I think, can identify with getting stuck and getting stuck in despair and what ifs and fear and being controlled by fear. And, you know, Lori is going to tell us more about that, how she made a conscious effort not to be controlled by fear. So
yeah.
Lori, thank you so much. And we're so, you know, biting at the bit to learn more of your story.
Well, I won't say that there hasn't been fear. There still are moments of that. But, you know, I thought about this the other day in the shower, where I do a lot of deep thinking, like most people, I think. And I really felt like the diagnosis was not a death sentence, but a life sentence, like a calling to live.
Okay.
To live fully. Because I had been a waiting type person.
Mm-hmm.
I also was a waiter in a restaurant, but that's not what we're talking about. But I was like a when-then kind of person. So, you know, when the kids do such and such, then I will whatever. Or when I'm not in rehearsals, or when my husband's not in rehearsals, or when the house is clean, then I will take care of myself. And whenever I would find those, you know, little moments or pockets, I'd often feel guilty. But the diagnosis was like this message from the universe on a loudspeaker, you know, congratulations, Lori Merrill Fink. The waiting is over.
Yeah.
You go to the front of the line of your life. It was like a Disney fast pass, you know,
yeah.
On a ride that I really didn't sign up for. But anyway, okay. Suddenly there was permission to practice self-care.
Wow.
And there were no more excuses. My nest was empty. I was retired. I had all the time in the world. I was the center of the universe for the first time in my life, and could practice what I call the reverse golden rule.
Mm. Tell me about that.
Well, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. How about do unto you what you do so well for others?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. The reverse golden rule. And, you know, it pulled me into myself in a way, like, you know, the word self-centered, I think, gets a really bad rap. But I want to read the Webster definition: independent of outside force or influence.
Okay.
So to be centered in myself makes me grounded, makes me stable, makes me not tossed around as much by the seas of life or a diagnosis. You know, friends come and go, people pass on, we might lose a job. We're the only thing we've got. I mean, we take that with us wherever we go. I mean, we remain. So why not befriend that core of who we are and let that be the starting point of everything? It doesn't mean that we're not available for friends or, you know, I mean, we're still accessible and we're still compassionate, but not at the expense of self-care.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So then I got on this speech, I joked in my CODA meeting about nothing like a diagnosis to put you on a speed date with your higher power. So she was like, hello, God? It's me, Lori. We haven't talked in a while. You know, the God that I grew up with, or at least the God I perceived, was this angry old white guy who was this wrathful, vengeful scorekeeper, and I was a lowly, did I say lowly?
Yes.
Sinner. So he felt really far away, very distant, and disapproving. So I felt fearful, not good enough, like he didn't like me very much. There was a lot of shame over the mistakes I would make in my life, some minor, some major. And I'd say for a long time that I had what I would call a transactional relationship to my higher power and coming to him in time or her, it, mm-hmm. in times of crisis. And it had to be really, really bad. Otherwise, I was general manager of the universe, right? I've got this. I'm your girl,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was large and in charge. But now I was on my knees, literally and, I mean, figuratively and literally. So the second person I called after I talked to my family was my BFF from high school. Hi, Tracy, if you're listening. She is a woman of deep, deep faith, you know, admirable faith. And I needed a prayer warrior. I needed a goddess. And she texted me back and said, don't worry, God's got this. And I got goosebumps. Goosebumps has always been a really good sign for me. It means something's true, something is connected to spirit, I don't know. And then a couple of days later, I got a text from her saying, I've been talking to God about you. And boom, I started bawling. First of all, tears of gratitude. But secondly, it was like this lightning bolt. It was like talking to God about me. I mean, that's how you pray. So prayer could just be talking to God. Well, I could totally do that. I could totally do that. And I cried at the realization of that. And thank you, Tracy, for making that so simple and accessible to me. So I talk a lot more to my higher power these days. So I was in my woo-woo chick room one day. My woo-woo chick room is my craft/meditation space in the basement. And that's what my husband and my kids have called it forever. And I love it.
I love that.
Yes. Because I am a little woo-woo and people who love me know that, but I don't remember what I was looking for or what I was doing, but a book literally, and I mean literally, fell off the shelf. I don't know how it could possibly fall off the shelf, but it did. And it, so I went and picked it up, and it was a book that I had used as a resource about 15 years ago for a movement class I was teaching, and the title was Your Body Believes Every Word You Say.
Wow.
Yeah. So boom, there was a gift. A gift from the universe. And I dove back into that full force. I had highlighted it, and, you know, 15 years ago, I was highlighting and underlining different things. And then a year ago, just this past Saturday, 2 days ago, I found this quote from director James Cameron, and it says, hope is not a strategy. Luck is not a factor. Fear is not an option.
It's deep.
Boom.
I like that.
Boom.
Right.
Boom. So this... that book and that quote, it was like, I know how I'm going to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
I know how I'm going to move forward. So I felt a shift and a pivot, and I hadn't started chemo yet, but I knew how I was going to proceed, and I was going to go back to my passion, my specialty, this whole body-mind connection, and it was going to play a starring role. And so I kind of woke up, and I decided I was taking an active part in my healing, which is so, so important for anybody out there listening with a diagnosis. I put both my hands on the steering wheel of my recovery and decided I would not be a victim. I mean, after all, I quote-unquote signed up for this, right?
Right.
And I was not going to be a statistic. So it's very interesting. I was in this different place, and people who would learn of my diagnosis would say, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And I'd say, "Don't be. I don't want that kind of, don't hold me in that kind of vibe. Don't hold me in pity. Don't hold me in fear. Don't hold me in worry." I said this especially to my kids, because I know it freaked them out. And my husband, too, and my family. But, you know, the energy I need from you when you think of me is that of light and healing and positivity.
Yes.
Encouragement. You know, keep the good mojo juju coming. Yeah, just holding me in the light. So getting ready, you know, to dive into treatment. I was somebody who had never taken aspirin unless I had to prior to my diagnosis. And, you know, this was going to be a major allopathic invasion. And you even have to sign a release form saying, "I realize that this treatment may cause my death." So you talk about turning it over and trust. And, you know, all the cancer patients out there know exactly what I'm talking about. So I went back to reframing things. I said, this is happening for me, not to me. Instead of saying, "I have cancer," that didn't feel right to me. I said, "I have cancer cells in two areas of my body that are not welcome and will be evicted."
Say that again.
I have cancer cells in my body that are not welcome and will be evicted.
I love that. I wish we could all say that out there. I hope they can.
Yeah.
Because that's brilliant.
Yeah. It's just a different energy. You know, being very careful with my words and my thoughts has been a big part of my medicine bag, I think. I've been getting treatment at SAH Cancer Institute. I decided, and I told my family, we're going to call this the Healing Institute, because that's what I was about.
Yes.
It felt the most nourishing to me. So I began this process of extreme self-care. And let me just say about self-care, it is not an indulgence, and it shouldn't be something we wait for a diagnosis for, or till the kids are out of the house, or, you know, whatever. It's a discipline, and discipline gets a dirty word. I mean, it feels like a dirty word, I think. I used to say discipline is doing what you need to do when you don't want to do it, like working out, eating right, New Year's resolutions, all that sort of stuff. But I think it was my friend Hillary who gave me another perspective years ago on discipline. She said, "What are you a disciple of?"
Yeah.
Like, what are you in discipleship to? Well, I was a disciple of healing, a co-creator in my healing. So it resulted in sort of this microscopic attention to what I put into and on my body. Cancer patients, you know what I'm talking about. And finding those things that nourished me, body, mind, and spirit.
That is, I love the different perspective. And, you know, it's sometimes just that small of a shift. You know, name that book again that fell off the shelf.
Your Body Believes Every Word You Say.
Wow.
And it's in the bibliography that I'm provided you that'll be
yes.
on your blog.
Yes, Lori has a huge list of just inspirational books that have really helped her. And I'm so excited to post that. Your Body Believes
Every
word you say. Oh,
so
my gosh.
Be careful.
Be careful. And that's not
mindful.
Only...
Be mindful. Careful, maybe.
Yeah.
But be mindful.
Mindful.
Like how you... Be very careful. I mean, one of the things that is a takeaway for me is, how do you finish "I am"?
Right.
Fill in the blank.
Fill in the blank.
Choose your I ams wisely. Choose I ams that serve you.
Yes.
You know, that lighten you, that heal.
And don't follow it up with "but."
Oh, no, there's no buts. No buts.
There's no
buts.
Get off your butts. So we're going to take another musical break, and love this song, Kinder. Tell me why you love this song, Kinder.
Well, first of all, it's a cappella. Secondly, these women have voices like angels. There are several lyrics in there that resonate with me. I've decided to be kinder to that little voice inside, telling me I'm beautiful, it's okay to be alive. That speaks to me.
Yeah.
And then, "I got what I came here for" is the way the song ends.
Love that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lesson in there. This is Kinder. just to kind of catch us up, Lori is talking about lessons she learned from a diagnosis and how she drew a line in the sand and said she is not going to succumb to this disease. And she put a positive spin on absolutely everything. Not to say that she didn't have moments of fear.
And I still do.
And still do. But what she did is she made a decision right then that she was going to, her and her higher power and all of her prayer warriors were going to take this down. Right, Lori?
Amen, sister.
So you, before the break, we were talking about just the lessons from your higher power and how the universe got your attention.
It sure did. Sure did, in a major, major way. And in a way that I might not have ever gotten that woke.
That woke up,
you know. Yeah. And there's a lot to be grateful for and a lot of lessons to learn. I will say that there's so much I could go on forever about the number of people who have reached out to me, the kind of love and support I've gotten from friends, from family, from friends of family, from family of friends, from my daughter's boyfriend's parents. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and gifts and cards. And I want you all to know that I've kept every single one of them. The talismans that came, I took them to every chemo. The socks that you sent that said "Fight like a girl" or "Cancer sucks," those went with me to treatment as well. So I cannot thank you enough, because that circle of support, I felt that. I continue to feel that even in my darkest moments, and that that's a huge part of the healing as well, and being open enough to receive that graciously. Remember, we were having coffee the other day talking.
Yes, I hope you were going to mention this.
The waitress, who's a friend of mine, comped my iced tea, and my first response was, "Oh, Mel, you don't have to do that," while I was just talking to you about being a gracious receiver. So, you know, let people do for you what they want to do for you,
right.
You know. And as someone who struggles with codependency, it's sort of like, I'll pay you back or whatever. It's all a tremendous waste of time. Let people do for you what they need to do for you. So a few other lessons, and, you know, I was worried about not having enough to say. My family's laughing at that, I'm sure. I want to talk just briefly about emotions, because anybody that's facing a diagnosis knows the roller coaster, and it is a roller coaster, and you better buckle up, because some days are diamonds and some days are, you know, toilet bowls, for lack of a better word. So, you know, there's this, in 12-step programs, they say you have to feel it to heal it. Well, that can be a really scary thing. And, you know, growing up, I felt like, you know, I didn't want to be vulnerable. You know, anger kind of felt wrong. Sadness made me feel weak. And I sure didn't want to appear to be needy or vulnerable. So, you know, there's always this urge, because that can be so scary. Like, if I start crying, will I ever stop? Right, so there's this urge to suppress and to numb out, and I did my fair share of all of that in healthy and unhealthy ways, like Merlot therapy, or working really hard and cleaning the house or whatever. But there's this 13th century mystic poet named Rumi who wrote a poem, and I'm not going to read it all, because I don't think we have time. But he says, treat those feelings like guests. Invite them in. He says, I will quote this, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, he may still be clearing you out for some new delight. Mm. How beautiful, right? As a guide. Here's the nifty thing. The biochemical process of feeling an emotion only lasts 90 seconds unless we attach a story to it.
Hmm.
90 seconds. And we get hooked on that. So that's was a liberating concept for me too. And so for me, the challenge is always not to get hooked. And my therapist, you know, my brilliant therapist, to say fear is here, anxiety is here, worry is here, cancer is not here.
Mm-hmm.
And so naming it often helps, it dissipates.
Separates.
It separates.
Right.
And so, like, 85% of the time, I'm in a great headspace. 15% of the time, not so much. The 15% is when I go down the rabbit hole of telling myself stories, and I won't see grandchildren, I won't see my kids get married. Wait, that's in reverse order. I won't see my kids get married, I won't see grandchildren, I won't grow old with Old Man Fink, which I definitely want to do. So I've given myself permission to feel, to let the tears... Sometimes screams. Sometimes I wait until the house is empty and I scream. I scare the crap out of the dog. But but then it goes. It flows and then it goes. Sometimes it lasts 90 seconds. Sometimes it lasts 5 minutes. But it always goes. And Pema Chodron, who is a Buddhist nun, prolific writer, she says, "You are the sky. Everything else is just weather."
That's a beautiful concept.
So when those emotions come, let them...
They're temporary.
Yeah, let them float by like clouds. Just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So emotions are just energy in motion. My body is amazing. The body, but I'm talking about mine, is amazingly resilient. Albert Einstein said, "We are slowed down sound and light waves, a walking bundle of frequencies tuned into the cosmos. We are souls dressed up in sacred biochemical garments, and our bodies are the instruments through which our souls play music." You know, the body's amazing. 37 trillion some odd cells, new skin cells every 2 to 3 days. We get a new skeleton every 10 years. You know, we're made of calcium, nitrogen, carbon, iron, the same thing as stars. So knowing all that, how could we not treat our bodies as anything more than a friend? Like, I never once felt my body betrayed me, and I've read in Facebook support groups, I feel like my body's betrayed me, and I get on there and I say, "Oh, sister, flip the script, flip the script." The body is our constant companion. It's a sacred container. So why not?
Yeah, use it in partnership to fight it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bless it. Praise it. You're on the same team.
Right.
Right? So that was a big part of it. And especially if you're always on the same team, but especially if you're faced with a diagnosis, you better team up with this beautiful physical thing that we are.
If you don't, you're in constant struggle.
Yeah,
it's a tug of war. Then you're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, another lesson is words have power. So I told you, I mentioned earlier about being very careful with my I ams. Flipping the script is something that I can do anytime. Sometimes I'm really good at it. Sometimes I suck.
What are some of your I ams that you told yourself during
this? I am
this?
Whole. I am healed. I am safe. I am well. I trust my body's ability to heal itself. I have everything I need in this moment. Lots of affirmations, which are part of my Pinterest board that survive and thrive.
That we're going to share as well.
Yeah.
So excited about that.
Yeah. Another big thing was surrender. It's process of letting go of hair, fingernails, plans, being able to go out in public while you're on chemo. For me, it was a breast. Lots of different things. And I had my canoe pointed upstream early on, and I decided, I was going to stop fighting the current, and I pointed my canoe downstream trusting that God's got this. And that I would be okay. And people have said, "Oh, you're so brave." And I think people always kind of, what do you say to a cancer patient? I mean, you want to be encouraging. I was talking to a friend, my good friend, who's also a cancer patient. And we were talking about that very thing. Like, what does that even mean? I don't feel brave. Do you feel brave? Well, no, I don't feel brave either. I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, taking each day as it comes and living life. So maybe that is bravery or resiliency. But I also think surrendering is the act of bravery, really.
Yeah.
It's not the push. It's not the punch. It's not the resistance. It's the, there's this Buddhist saying, let go or be dragged. Yeah.
Brings up something interesting, Lori. What is something to say? You know, people struggle with that in times of struggle.
Yeah.
And, what is appropriate? What would you have wanted? Or what did you want to hear? I know you didn't want to hear, "I'm sorry." And that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But give our listeners something, because it's all around us. It's
it is
in every facet of our lives.
Yeah. Well, the last thing you want to do is say, well, my uncle had such and such and he died. You know, I would say recognize that cancer patients are, you know, probably in a vulnerable headspace a lot of the time. And the reaction that you get may not necessarily be the reaction you would get otherwise. And when I said I didn't want to hear I'm sorry, I said it in a very kind and loving way. You know, just hold, just flip it. Just hold me, you know, hold me in the light. Hold it a little bit differently. Sometimes you can just offer to be with them.
Yeah.
How are you?
How are you? And one of the things I always think about is we overuse I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you. Facebook has, you know, really brought that down to such milquetoast type response. What about offering a blessing right then?
Absolutely.
You know, when you have the moment, instead of saying, I'm going to go home and I'm going to pray for you tonight, why don't you just say, God is with you. I know you, he's got you in his hand. Everything is going to go well today. I, you know, giving you all my positive energy as we stand here today.
Right. And people will say, what can I do? And I think it's important for cancer patients to let them know, because they want to be able to do something, and they're doing is as much for them in their, I don't know what to say, I don't know how to say it, what can I do for you? I read this great book called Crazy Sexy Cancer by a stage 4 cancer survivor. She's been in remission for a long time. Anyway, she says people have baby showers, they have wedding showers, why not have a cancer shower? And so I thought, wow, that's a great idea.
Yes. Hmm.
So it came down to a friend of mine, Susan, said, I'm on it. Give me a guest list and give me a list of things that you want. So I was sitting down writing on 3x5 cards things that I wanted that I could have bought for myself, but asking for what would be great, like satin pillowcases, pine-scented candles, lavender essential oil, bring me your best salad, cook dessert for my husband, you know, that sort of stuff. And feeling worthy of receiving those gifts. But you know what? It was such a gift to those women. I heard time and time again, oh my gosh, I heard from you. I couldn't go to this party because I was on chemo.
Yeah.
So there were all these women that didn't, some of them didn't know each other, but they all knew me. So they had this fabulous party, you know.
That is awesome.
Yeah. But then they were all like fighting over the cards, you know, oh, I want the one, whatever, whatever. So it was a real exercise in asking for what you need for me, and graciously receiving it all. How are we doing on time?
We're doing good.
Okay.
We're gonna take another musical break in just a minute, but I want to hear your last thoughts before we do that.
Okay, absolutely. The lesson, I think, was I'm worthy. Whew, that's a good I am. That's a good I am. I am worthy of all the love, support, gifts I receive. That's a real growing edge for folks with codependency issues.
Yes.
They'll be the ones to do the gifts. They'll be the ones to bring the casserole, you know, or whatever. And but no, I'm fine.
I'm fine.
I don't need a free iced tea. Thanks anyway.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That kind of thing. I mean, it's nuts. So it's, again, the reverse golden rule. It's about, you know, opening up to the love and support that I'd like to think I've offered my friends, my family, my students, my colleagues over the years, and taking it all in with a grateful, you know, sky-wide grateful heart.
I love that. I love that. You know, how many times this is, I'm such an analogy person. All my listeners know that. But, you know, you walk into a store and you say, I'm just looking. But really, you do have something in mind that you're looking for. And it's a knee jerk. So even for a codependent, your knee jerk is, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You're not fine.
No, I could be bleeding out of my jugular and say, you know, it's okay. I got this. I just need a Band-Aid.
You've got things to, you've got things to do.
Right.
Do you have a napkin left over from your coffee? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for those, just a different point of view. Gosh, you just turn it just a tiny bit and it opens up a whole new way of thinking.
It's just micro shifting, really. I mean, it's micro shifting that makes a really big difference, or has made a big difference for me.
Yeah, huge. We are going to take our last musical break. More than enough. What does that mean to you?
Well, I love this because it's got kind of a reggae vibe. Mm. But the things that come up for me, I'm a lyric. I mean, I love music too, but you know, when the music's in, and lyrics are great, it's such a bonus. He says, you know, go and be yourself. If no one's watching, go be yourself. If somebody else is watching, go and be yourself. Release and let go. I release and let go of my story. It never really served me anyway.
Ah.
And all I ever really have is this moment. And he repeats that over and over again. So
keeps us in the present.
This moment, yeah.
Welcome back. I cannot believe we are almost out of time. We have so enjoyed Lori Merrill Fink. Awake at the Wheel, Lessons from a Diagnosis. Lori, I want to give you all the time I can possibly give you to give us some nuggets to walk away with.
Came down to how could I feed my body, mind, and spirit in this whole process. And so there's a brilliant book called The Desire Map by Danielle Laporte. It's on the bibliography. She talks about something called core desired feelings. So how do I want to feel? And you come up with four or five words, and then suddenly the to-do lists drop away, your yeses become very clear, your noes become very clear. So my CDFs fluctuate, and they can on a daily basis, but they fall into this ballpark: vibrant, free and flowing, connected, radiant, and whole. So I have things that I can do for my body, mind, and spirit that put me in those in that place. So I don't have all the answers. Here's just what's worked for me, trying to walk the talk. Life is happening for you, not to you. Life doesn't turn out as it should. It turns out as it does.
Mm.
Very different perspective. And it's a much more juicy place to live from. Like, what is this teaching me? What is this lesson? Nobody can take care of you better than you. Nobody. And nobody should.
That's right.
Nobody should. Self-care is a discipline, and you're worthy of every bit of that same loving care you give your family and friends. The reverse golden rule. What are your non-negotiables in terms of self-care? Like, I don't have time is really code for it's not a priority. Watch your words. Let your IMs work for you. Ask for what you need. Be willing to receive it with grace and gratitude. And you are so much more powerful than you want to admit. Marianne Williamson says, our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate. It's that we're powerful beyond measure. And we are.
Tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to chat further, I can be reached via email. It's BLUREZ, N as in Nancy, ITE, BlueResNight@gmail.com. I would be happy to talk with anybody. And I just want to end with thanking every single person who has said a prayer, who has sent a card, a gift, a casserole. It's all part of the medicine, but I have to end with thanking my rock, Tim Fink, who's let me cry and given me space and loved me through this. I could not have done it without you. And my gorgeous children, AJ and Emily, who are the most important thing and the best thing I've ever done. And the rest of my family and friends as well. Thank you so, so much. Bone deep love and gratitude to everyone.
And Lori gave us our challenge for tonight. So may you remember your ability to choose what is deeply nourishing. May you ignite your power to make choices that align with your soul. May you take action in the name of your authentic fire. May you find the courage to heal, be free, and grow. And that's from Tanya Markle. Thank you so much, Lori. I hope you guys out there really take this and go with it. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
Someone through to the